You've got a headache. Now I've got some strange disease. Don't worry about it. This pill will set your mind at ease. It's called Progenitorivox. It's made by Squab Merle Co. It's a life-enhancing miracle, but there are some things you should know.
It may cause agitation, palpitations, excessive salivation, constipation, male lactation, rust-colored urination, hallucinations, bad vibrations, mild electric shock sensations, but it's worth it for the drugs I need.
Good morning. This is Steady Health Radio. I'm your host, Robert Reister. I'm coming to you over BBS Radio Channel 1 this Tuesday and every Tuesday at 11 Eastern, 10 Central, 1600 GMT. I'm really excited about my guest this morning, Dr. Carl O'Helvey. Dr. Helvey is a registered nurse. He has a PhD in public health from Johns Hopkins. He's been an author, a professor, teaching nurses for years, but he also has a fascinating story of beating lung cancer. That's something that's almost never done. He's the author of You Can Beat Lung Cancer Using Alternative Integrative Interventions. We have an introduction to Dr. Helvey on steadyhealth.com this morning with some links back to his site. Welcome, Dr. Helvey. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Robert. I'm happy to be with you.
Tell me, why did you write this book, Beating Lung Cancer?
Well, Robert, I wanted people to be empowered to have the information that they would need if they were faced with a diagnosis of cancer of any sort, so that they wouldn't be pushed into a treatment that they didn't necessarily feel was right for them. And for some people, chemotherapy may be right, radiation may be right, but for me, it wasn't. And I want people to know that there are alternatives, that if you go to your primary doctor or you go to the oncologist, usually they will tell you you have a choice. You can have chemo, surgery, radiation. They do not mention that there are alternatives. And people that ask if there are alternatives usually are turned away and told that or told that these don't work. So I want people to be empowered to have the information, and I think being a nurse, people may listen to me a little bit more than they listen to some other people. I looked a few years ago, and nursing was the most trusted profession of all professions, and it had been that way for 4 or 5 years in a row. So I want people to have the information. And if they're faced with the diagnosis, to think about it, to make the decision that they think is right for them.
Well, what's different about lung cancer from other kinds of cancer? Why is lung cancer a particularly appropriate kind of cancer for the use of alternative remedies?
Well, I'm not sure that it's any more appropriate than any other type of cancer, but the problem with lung cancer, you hear of breast cancer, prostate cancer. You don't hear as much about lung cancer, but there are more deaths from lung cancer than from prostate, colon, and breast cancer combined. The reason being that there usually are no symptoms until it becomes stage 3 or 4, and it's much more difficult to treat at that stage. And consequently, there are many, many more deaths. And so alternative treatment will work with any of it, but it's a little bit more successful with cancer overall than with lung cancer. For example, Dr. Forsythe, who wrote a chapter in my book, using alternative interventions is having something like 46% with stage 4 or 5 year survival for all cancers, but with lung cancer, he's having 39% with that same criteria of stage 4 or 5 year survival. And this, I'm not making light of it, this is fantastic in view of traditional for stage 4 or 5 year survival is 2% success. So he's having fantastic results, but he just doesn't have quite as good
Well, you know, a lot of our listeners who have someone in the family, or maybe they themselves have lung cancer, have a lot of trouble wrapping their minds around the fact that 46% chance of surviving 5 years is great.
Mm-hmm,
but
right.
That's in comparison to the usual chemotherapy, immunotherapy, radiation, and surgery, which are painful, expensive, and tremendous. They consume your life. Is that fair to say, Dr. Helvey?
Yes, they do. Whereas with mine, I had no side effects. I continued teaching. I continued writing, doing my research. I was so involved with my daily activities that I didn't have a lot of time to think about myself other than to think about, well, I've got to take these herbs now, and I've got to take these herbs now. But other than that, I didn't have a lot of time to think about myself, and I think that probably was very good because the research shows that if you're positive, you attract positive results, you tend to have a more healthy life, better survival, et cetera. So I think that not having time to think about myself was probably positive.
Well, you know, I don't think we've mentioned to the audience just how long ago this was. When was it that you had lung cancer, Dr. Helvey?
It was 1974, so I just celebrated my 39th year in July.
That's a wonderful thing. Does that put you into the upper echelon of lung cancer survivors? Are there other people that make it this long? Or?
I couldn't find anyone from a computer search, anyone that had lived that long. The longest living person I found had developed lung cancer in 1972, and he died in 2010. And so I concluded from everything I found that I was probably the longest living lung cancer survivor.
My own mother had lung cancer and other kinds of cancer. She lived 11 and a half years, which was we thought was amazing.
Great.
And I've met one other person who lived 12 years, but you're the only person I've ever met who lived 39 years now, which is a great thing. And you say that the doctor you mentioned is getting 46% of his patients to live more than 5 years?
Right. That's Dr. James Forsyth in Reno. He's done a cohort study of, I think it was 500 patients, and he had all stage four, and for 5 years survival, he had 46%, but for lung cancer, he had 39%.
What is he doing that's different from conventional therapy?
He is both an MD and a homeopathic doctor. There are three states that are a little more lenient as far as alternative treatment, Nevada being one of them, and he lives in Reno. And he's an MD, and what they do, the physicians go back to school, they take 100 hours of coursework, they take the national examinations and become a homeopathic physician. So his treatments, he started using pawpaw, which was a supplement from trees, and he had about 28% 3-year survival with that. And then he started using poly-MVA, which is it has alpha-lipoic acid, and he mixes it with vitamins and minerals and amino acids, etc. And he was having about 30% success for 5-year survival. But then he added some homeopathic substances. I don't know what they are. He called it the Forsyth formula. And that's when he had the 46%. So it's primarily homeopathic substances, vitamins, minerals, plant-based substances. So it's all pretty natural and with almost no side effects.
Maybe some people in my audience don't know what a homeopathic substance is. Could you explain that for us?
Well, as I understand it, Robert, a homeopathic substance is where they take the substance that you're allergic, and you know this a lot more than I do, but I think it's where you take a substance that someone is allergic to and you dilute it, dilute it, dilute it, dilute it, and then you give them a very diluted part of that, and it gives you immunity to the substance that immunity to whatever it was that you were had allergies to or allergic reaction to. Is that correct?
Well, that basically that would be how it works. Only he'd be using substances that mimic the effects of lung cancer in very, very tiny doses, basically teaching the body that it's okay to have a small amount of this kind of reaction, and maybe a little bit more, or maybe a little bit more, and eventually the body figures all that out. What is it like, if you don't mind my asking, I hope I'm not getting too far from our planned questions, but what's it like to be a patient of Dr. Forsythe's? Do you see him once a year or once a day?
Robert, I've never been a patient of Dr. Forsythe. Dr. Forsythe is relatively more recent. My doctor was a physician in Vienna, Virginia, and he had studied at, or I mean, had worked at the National Cancer Institute and was having so much success that the FDA and the drug companies closed him down. And so this brave physician continued his practice, but I had to sign forms that I wouldn't report him. And so he continued to see patients using the same protocol that he had used at the National Cancer Institute. But I found out recently, I knew he had disappeared and I couldn't find him after, you know, I finished treatment. But I found out recently that the Virginia Board of Medicine had taken his license, and they had also closed the pharmacy in Baltimore, Maryland, where I got my Laetril.
Oh, so you were using vitamin B17, Laetril.
Yes.
That's
right,
from,
right. So I met Dr. Forsythe. He was recommended as a person to write a chapter in my book, and I went on Google, and I Googled him, and I discovered that he was in trouble with the FDA, and had been taken to court, et cetera, et cetera. And I decided, well, what is this man doing that is so successful that he's drawn attention to himself and has become a threat? And so I investigated further, and that's where I found out that he was having these fantastic results with survival. And so I decided I wanted him to write a chapter in my book, which he graciously did. And so I have not met him, but I'm giving a paper at the Cancer Control Society 41st Annual Convention in Los Angeles this coming weekend. And Dr. Forsythe is speaking just before I speak, so I will have the opportunity to meet him.
Well, that sounds great. By the way, just to let the audience know again, it's You Can Beat Lung Cancer Using Alternative and Integrative Interventions. Just look for You Can Beat Lung Cancer on Amazon.com or from our links or from Dr. Helvey's site, which is beatlungcancer.net. Well, let's think about these possibilities for a moment. You went to a doctor who was using Laetril, which was essentially banned. Right. It went offshore. Mm-hmm. Dr. Forsythe is using a method that's been around for a couple hundred years and is very popular in the United Kingdom and Canada and Australia, but it's regarded with skepticism here. Could just any old doctor actually use homeopathic medicine in the context of all the other things they do? Or do you have to go to Reno?
As I understand it, there are three states that are more progressive as far as the alternative interventions, those being Nevada, Arizona, and I never remember if the third one is Connecticut or Massachusetts. It's one or the other. It's more difficult for doctors in other states. I know that, for example, Florida does not license, practice, but they can't get insurance reimbursement. There's other penalties for not being licensed.
And well, actually, Dr. Helvey and I had we haven't discussed this, but I teach a course in homeopathy. And in the United States, there's one state where you can't really dispense these preparations at all, and that's Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And in other states, within the context of getting all the other stuff that the regulatory authorities expect you to have, meeting the standard of care for whatever the disease is, homeopathy is considered okay, since they really can't argue against it because you're talking about materials that have been diluted trillions and trillions of times. And how it works, well, it may be interaction between the doctor and the patient. It may be a placebo effect, but that's not a bad thing. But it is tricky, and I suppose one of the things we ought to do for your followers and for mine is to help them find ways that they can actually work with their doctors and get these things without having to go not to take anything away from Dr. Forsythe, okay, of course, but maybe over the next few months we can help some of your listeners and my listeners access these medications within the context of conventional medical care. So that's something I'd really love to explore with you. But to get back to the point, so you were using Laetrile, and what do you do to take Laetrile?
Well, he prescribed oral Laetrile, and so I took 2,000 milligram a day. Now, people usually start currently at 3,000 milligram a day for the first 21 days and then switch to the 2,000. But several people I've talked with think that the Laetrile that is available now is not as potent as it was 38 years ago. I think that there's been so much done as far as the genetically modifying and growth hormones and pesticides and everything else that have affected, I'm sure, the trees on which the apricot kernels grow and everything else, so that they think that it's not as potent now. But I took 2,000 milligram a day of the Laetrile. I also took pancreatic enzymes, which are very important to take with the Laetrile, because the thinking is that most people that have cancer are very deficient of pancreatic enzymes, and these are very important in the absorption of the supplements and the things that you take. And that also is the rationale for the diet that I was on, because I was on a diet that was similar to a vegan diet currently. And it was raw fruit and vegetables, 75%. And they give you, they produce enzymes, whereas the cooked food does not. And I read recently that digestion takes place in the upper part of the stomach about 30 to 45 minutes, and if you eat raw foods, the enzymes start digesting the food in the upper stomach. But if you eat the processed cooked foods, there is no digestion taking place in the upper stomach, so it moves to the lower stomach, which puts more burden on the pancreatic and other enzymes as far as the digestion. And also protein, especially meat, requires much more enzymes and is much more difficult to digest. And consequently, it often will sit in the gut and is not completely digested. So I took the pancreatic enzymes. I took high-dose vitamin A, and the theory behind the vitamin A is that it helps to preserve the normal cells so they don't convert to cancer cells. I took high-dose vitamin E, and they told me that that was to help with the toxicity from the vitamin A. I took vitamin Bs. I took digestive aids. I took a variety of minerals and herbs, and as I mentioned, the diet was primarily a vegan diet. It was 75% raw fruit and vegetables with some additional cooked I could have grains, I could have nuts, but I couldn't have peanuts because they're a high source of protein. I could have no protein, which meant no dairy, no meat, no chicken, no simple carbohydrates, so there was no cake, pie, ice cream, none of the things that I used to consider the good things. And that was basically what the doctor prescribed. Now, the Laetril, I'd like to go back and mention, because some people may see the traditional literature that will say Laetril has cyanide in it, it will kill you, or it will send you to the emergency unit. But what they don't say is that the cyanide in the Laetril requires enzymes to release it. Cancer cells have that enzyme, but normal cells do not, and so that it's very specific for cancer cells, but does not affect normal cells. And I took Laetril and also 25 to 30 apricot kernels, which is the largest source of Laetril. I took this for 2 years and had no side effects. So I know from experience that the cyanide does not kill you or send you to the emergency unit.
Yeah, the hydrogen cyanide is released within, I forget where in the which organelle in the cell it's released in, but it's very localized, and it is much more likely to have to occur in a cell with a kind of cancer metabolism. But this really isn't a science lesson show. Maybe I'll write about that on Steady Health sometime for people who are curious. But you were taking a product that's been used in traditional Chinese medicine at least 1900 years. It's a formula that is used for in Chinese medicine for sore throats, for a lump in the throat, when children get antsy, for the ancient Chinese version of ADHD. It's the apricot kernels themselves are well known to be non-toxic. It's strictly to the cancer cells that you'd be having that reaction. And the pancreatic enzymes not only would help break down the food, but of course you've got cancer cells breaking down if the procedure works. So something has to help you, your body clear out the excess proteins from the cancer cells, which is one of the reasons for not eating meat in certain phases of cancer treatment. That this is something you probably should talk with a professional with, I would think. Not everybody should go on a vegan diet when they have cancer. Some people shouldn't. It depends on the stage and the kind of cancer. Well, how long did it take you to get well? How long did it take to start working for you?
Well, the doctor, the alternative doctor, never asked me to come back, and so I didn't see him again. But I went back to my primary doctor. I can't remember whether it was every 3 months or 6 months, to have x-rays to follow the progress. And after 2 years, my primary doctor said that the spot was gone, but he guessed he'd made the wrong diagnosis. And I had never told him that I was doing anything, and so he thought we were in a wait-and-see mode. And so I knew he wouldn't understand if I told him what I was doing or wouldn't accept it, so I just didn't tell him. But my friend who I had taught with when I was at Duke University, and who at this point was the medical director for Blue Cross Blue Shield for the state of North Carolina, wanted to see all of the lab and the x-rays and the biopsy and everything else. And I took it all to him, and he confirmed for the third time that it was definitely lung cancer. So it took 2 years, basically. But I still follow that regime in a modified version.
So you still mostly eat raw foods? Is that right?
Well, I eat I have salads for lunch every day. I do eat some chicken. I do eat occasional fish, but I'm leery of too much fish because of the mercury. I don't eat farm grown. because of the toxins. I eat a lot of fruit and vegetables. I have recently added the Budwick diet as a breakfast, as part of my breakfast, because it sounds like a good idea. And periodically, maybe once a year for a couple months, I'll either eat apricot kernels or I'll get some Laetril and take that for a couple months. I continue with exercise every day. What I didn't mention was that the doctor gave me the physical aspects, but I added a more holistic approach. So I added mental, spiritual, environmental, political, and so forth. So I prayed every day. I did affirmations. I did visualization. I tried to serve others. I tried to develop my patience, forgiveness, and some of the other spiritual attributes. So I tried to use a more holistic approach, and I have continued that, you know, every day. I still try to serve others. I try to stay mentally active and stay optimistic and not worry about things and stay positive and so forth. So I think that is a very important aspect of recovery and preventing a recurrence.
I'm trying to get a mental picture here. So it sounds like you have a spirituality, and, mm-hmm. and you're serious about it. There are certain things you're going to do with your life as long as you're alive. You don't deny the fact that you've had lung cancer. By the way, how's your health otherwise?
Oh, I'm in excellent health. I live in a 3-story house. I'm up and down the stairs. I get up at 6:30. I walk an hour before I have breakfast and all. I drove 2 weeks ago. I drove upstate New York to celebrate my 81st birthday. It was 10-hour drive up and 12-hour back. I had no problem at all. Wasn't tired when I got up there. I'm in excellent health. And, you know, I have occasional little problems, like my hemorrhoids may flare up for a week or two, or my hiatal hernia may act up occasionally, maybe once or twice a year. But, you know, in general, I'm in excellent health and have no known chronic health problems, and I don't take any prescribed medication.
That's really unusual for anyone of your age. Usually by the time you're 81, the doctor has you on at least 5 or 6 pills, maybe a dozen.
Right.
And you're... maybe we should all get lung cancer early in life.
Now, I do take some herbs, Robert. I like most men over age, well, most men get it much earlier than I did, but I have an enlarged prostate, and it came on about 3 years ago, so I was about 78. And fruit and vegetables will delay this, so I think that's probably why I didn't have it till later in life. But I do take a variety of herbs for that. I take something that's got salt palmetto in it, and I take something called Cramax that has one capsule is comparable to 8 glasses of cranberry juice to prevent any infection in the urinary tract. I take a pumpkin seed elixir that increases the urinary flow. And so I do take, some herbs that handle that. The doctor's been trying to get me to have cataract surgery for 6 years. And I take herbs that handle that, and I occasionally will get dry eye, and I take vitamins and herbs that will handle the dry eye and clear that up when that comes about. So I think that there are natural ways to deal with all problems that come along. It's just a matter of finding out what to take for what condition. And I think that if we can avoid a lot of the chemicals and drugs, we're much better off.
So one of the things I heard you say is you still go to see a doctor.
Well, my doctor tells me now I can come once a year because he says Obamacare does not allow you to come when you're healthy. And I said, well, my previous doctor let me come every 4 months for lab work so that if there's any problem, it's picked up early. I said, I am a cancer survivor. I, at one time, was borderline diabetic. It hasn't been a problem in 20-some years. At one time, my thyroid was borderline, and it hasn't been a problem for a while. But he says, well, you can come once a year. You're healthy. So I see the doctor once a year. I don't have a lot of faith in him, but I do see him. And sometimes if I go otherwise, it's just to get a diagnosis, because if they give me a prescription, I'm usually going to throw it away anyhow and find something natural to use. An example was about 25 years ago, I had pain, and I went and they told me I had diverticulitis and that I should take steroids, that I would never be able to eat berries again, I would never be able to eat nuts again. So I threw the prescription away, and I picked up some aloe vera, and I like the Georgia's because it's debittered, so it tastes like water. And I drank 4 ounces in the morning and 4 ounces at night, and in 4 days, the pain was gone. And as I say, that was 25 years ago. I've never had a problem since. I eat berries for breakfast every morning. I eat 4 pounds of nuts a week. And when I had my last colonoscopy, they told me I had diverticulosis. And I told him, I don't bother it, and it doesn't bother me.
By the way, our listeners may have heard the aloe vera and missed the debittered part. Aloe vera bitters are a laxative. So if you don't want the laxative effect, you do want the debittered aloe vera. This is fascinating. So you do keep in contact with modern medicine, and I suppose you were teaching nursing students and public health students, so right. you certainly had a lot of contact with the medical establishment over the years. Are you only able to speak out now that you're retired, or at least retired from working at educational institutions, or did you have to keep quiet about all this?
No, I would also, I wasn't as adamant about it before as I am now, because now I'm more focused on it. I used to focus on both, but I always have tried to give students a second perspective. I sat in one day, a colleague was doing a class on cancer, and she goes through the chemo, radiation, and surgery, and when she finished, I raised my hand and asked if I could give students another perspective. I told them my story. They were all very interested, but the faculty member said, well, it worked for you, but it's not known to be successful, and I couldn't teach that. And I said, that's fine, as long as the students have a different perspective. And I hear from maybe 60 cancer patients every month. They'll call or they'll email me. And it's their choice. As I say, I want them to have the information, but I want people to make their own decision about what is best for them, because chemotherapy may be best for someone. And there have been people cured with chemotherapy. And it is successful for things like testicular cancer. But I just want people to make their own decision and not be forced into a decision that they may decide down the road was not the right decision. So I listen to what people say and what they want, and if they want chemo, then my role is to direct them to resources that will help lessen the toxicity of the chemotherapy or the toxicity of the radiation. If they want an alternative, then my role is to provide encouragement, provide medical resources. I do have lists of physicians around the country and around the world that do treat with alternative. And if people, I will look up if someone's in Kentucky, I will look up and see who I can find in Kentucky that will treat them naturally if that's what they want. So, but it's their decision what they want in treatment.
By the way, let's let the audience know how they can get in touch with you. How can they get in touch with you?
My email address is Carl Helvey, CarlHelvie, at cox.net. My website, they can also contact me through that, and that, as you mentioned earlier, is beatlungcancer.net. And my radio show is holistichealthshow.com. So they can reach me through any of those ways. People do call me. I prefer not to be called, but if someone calls me, I'm certainly going to talk with them, and I do get several calls every month. And I always make calls and emails a priority.
It is amazing how many people you will hear from when you do a book or you start doing radio shows.
Mm-hmm.
I personally hadn't planned to share this, but I have a third perspective on cancer treatment. I've had bone cancer as a child, and it really wasn't my decision. My parents said, take that tumor out. And I got one of the first hip replacements ever done. It was a bone graft from cancer of the hip joint. And when I was 10 years old in 1965, and I actually was included in the discussion, but I was certainly not included in the decision being 10 years old. We had a discussion on whether I should get radiation treatment, and the doctor said, well, you'll never grow after you get radiation treatment. So this, well, it's better to have cancer than to spend the rest of your life deformed by radiation. Back then, radiation was a really primitive process. And we discussed chemotherapy, and of course, I wasn't old enough to really make the decision, but the doctor said, chemotherapy is worse than cancer. It's a matter of which kills you first, or which kills what first, whether the chemotherapy kills cancer or the chemotherapy kills you. So I didn't have chemotherapy. I just had really great surgery. And I haven't had any recurrence in 48 years. I have had other cancers, which I've also had surgically removed and with no complications at all. Surgery is where I'm at, if you can find a good surgeon. But, you know, not every cancer is amenable to that. Not every person will make that choice. But so personally, I'm not married on alternatives. If you can find medical treatment that works, is uncomplicated, go for it. It's just kind of hard to find. And if you can't find that kind of treatment, I suggest you go to someone like Dr. Helvey and see if they can't give you some advice to go the right direction. Is there anything you can tell us about preventing lung cancer?
Well, there's a lot written. Now, if you look at the causes, you will get some of the prevention, and being a public health person, I don't subscribe to any one cause-effect relationship. Rather, in public health, we think in terms of multiple factors, because not everyone exposed to the tuberculosis bacillus in the past got tuberculosis. Some people are more immune to it than others, you know, so there's agent, host, environmental factors, but there are certain factors that have been identified that are very instrumental in lung cancer, one being smoking. And about 89% of all lung cancer is a result of primary smoking. Another 3% is secondary smoke. Another 2% is radon. Another 2% is asbestos. And then they have identified diet as a another factor. So if you got everyone in the world to stop smoking, it would make a dramatic reduction in lung cancer. But that's not going to happen because there's so many pressures to continue smoking as there are to continue to get people to stop smoking. But smoking is a preventive. I mean, non-smoking is a preventive. having houses checked to make sure there's no radon escaping into the house. There's no asbestos in the house. And usually asbestos is all right as long as you don't move it and it becomes airborne. And diet, another big thing. And they have found things like leafy vegetables are a big preventive as far as lung cancer. I think that a lot of people periodically just eat some apricot kernels as a preventive, and I think that's not a bad idea. I think if people live a healthy lifestyle, and by that I mean a good diet, and at this stage in the development of the United States, to me, a good diet is primarily organic because of the genetically modified, the growth hormones, the pesticides. So I stay pretty much with the organic, but I do eat locally grown if I know the farmer and I know his farming practices. I think that exercise, again, the research has shown that exercise prevents so many health problems, including cancer. So I think people need to get off the couch and walk, if nothing more. I see my neighbors, they all have golf carts. I live in a golf cart community on the Chesapeake Bay. They run their kids around in the golf cart when these kids should be out playing and walking. I'm the only one in the neighborhood who does not have a golf cart because I walk. I feel that as long as I can walk, I'm going to walk. And so exercise is very important. So I think diet, exercise, staying optimistic will help. Having a faith in something beyond yourself, trying to help your others, being positive to other people. All of these things, I think, are very instrumental in preventing cancer or any health problem.
Well, you know, one of the amazing things, I did some research on mesothelioma, the kind of lung cancer that's caused by asbestos. And I didn't do the study myself. I only read the study. It's done at Louisiana State University, where there are a number of cases of, they see a lot of mesothelioma cases. And they started making inquiries about the diets of shipyard workers who got mesothelioma after they worked with asbestos and shipyard workers who didn't get mesothelioma after they worked with asbestos for a number of years. And one of the surprising things they found out that if you ate carrots once a month and tomatoes once a month, you had a significantly lower, and I think the figure was something on the order of 40% lower risk of developing lung cancer after exposure to asbestos. You didn't have to eat these foods once a day or at every meal or even once a week. Only once a month made a measurable difference. And actually eating once a day wasn't tremendously better. Might have been better for other reasons. But
what's interesting there, Robert, is – Vitamin A, carrots, high vitamin A. And remember I said I was on therapeutic doses of vitamin A? I was on 300,000 units the first week, and then it dropped to, I think it was 100,000 units, and then 50,000 for the first year. And the normal, or the recommended, is 5,000 international units. And the theory was that it would prevent normal cells from converting to cancer cells. So I'm wondering if the carrots had anything to do with the high vitamin A content.
And I would think so. And also lycopene, lycopene in tomatoes is also transformed into retinoic acid. It's a much more inefficient process than beta carotene in carrots. But even tomatoes can give you vitamin A. Almost any colored vegetable can give you vitamin A. And it's a degree of protection against certain kinds of cancer. For instance, cervical cancer is much less likely in women who eat three servings of orange or yellow vegetables per week. endometrial cancer is less frequent in women who eat 3 to 5 servings of vegetables, yellow or orange vegetables every week. It's amazing what vitamin A will do. Now, I would tend to think that it's squamous cell carcinomas, a specialized kind of cancer that is affected by vitamin A and all these chemicals like beta-carotene, alpha-carotene, lycopene, and lutein. They're related to vitamin A. I don't really know that. But, hey, something that protects you against squamous cell carcinoma is a great thing. And if it's a carrot, I think I'd go for the carrot.
Right. I think people also have been very afraid of taking too much vitamin A. And I think that right now with vitamin D, people are going in the other direction. They're, everyone has taken way too much. You know, I've talked with people that have taken 5,000 a day, 10,000 a day, and the recommended is under 1,000, isn't it? If I remember right.
Well, if you're not vitamin D deficient, and certainly more than 10,000, I've run into people who have taken 50 to 100,000 units a day who develop bone fractures. Because at very high levels, the calcitonin enzyme, very high levels of vitamin D, the hormone calcitonin starts acting differently because of some enzymatic processes. Long and short is a little bit of vitamin D helps calcium go into your bones. A lot of vitamin D takes calcium out. And if you just go crazy with vitamin D, that's not a good thing. Yeah. Moreover, actually it came up in Europe when a company was adding vitamin D powder to hamburger to make it look redder. And somebody put in 10,000 times too much, and they had an epidemic of people blistering when they went out in the sun because they were exposed to excessive amounts of vitamin D. You can't possibly take as much vitamin D as they were putting into that hamburger meat. This is on the order of 1 million to 2 million units. Right. Well, I guess you could take that much, but don't. Just saying that even good things can backfire on you. It doesn't take a lot of effort in terms of diet to make a big difference. As for getting the stuff you have to have, you don't have to go to the Whole Foods and buy a shopping cart full of purple carrots. You can see your local farmer and get a carrot, even one carrot. One carrot a month makes a difference in some studies of lung cancer. Is there any thought you'd like to leave with all of us about cancer prevention or living a good life?
No, I think I pretty much covered it. I think the main thing is that I want people to know that doctors are not God, that doctors are human, just like we are, that they probably are giving you 6 months because they believe that and they want you to be prepared, but that is probably not the best thing to say to someone because it puts them in a negative mood to begin with. And you need to be upbeat and positive. And also that, I forgot my train of thought, but it also is back to just living a healthy lifestyle, helping others, and making the decisions that you think is best for you, and having all the information before you make the decision. Don't be rushed into a decision. Usually the doctor, when he says you've got 6 months to live or you've got to have surgery right off, you feel like if I don't do this, then I'm not going to make it, you know. And so people need to be able to sit back, reflect on it, pray about it if they pray, and make a decision that is right for them. Don't be rushed into something. And I think that's very important.
I really don't want to end on a downer, and we won't, but if you're told you have 6 months to live, for one thing, how does the doctor really know that?
Right.
And if you have 6 months to live, they can't do anything for you anyway.
No, no.
So why go through all these painful procedures to make 6 months into 6 months in a week?
And that's why I decided to go a different direction, because I figured if I've only got 6 months, I don't want to be debilitated for that 6 months, because right now I'm navigating and I'm not having that many problems. And so why would I do that? Because I'd seen people that had had all kinds of jaw removals for throat cancer, et cetera, when I was a nurse at Bellevue, and very disfiguring and, you know, debilitating, and I'd seen people on chemotherapy, and so I figured, why do that for a few months survival time?
Yeah, I'm hesitant even to bring up this topic, but I think it's important that people understand that when these chemotherapy drugs are tested, they aren't tested on healthy people. They're tested on hopeless people to see if there's maybe a few weeks or a few days that the chemotherapy can add to life. And when enough people are tested and there is enough evidence that the drug actually does make a difference of a few days, a few weeks, maybe a month or two, then the drug is approved. But we only have drugs for really, really sick people to keep them sick a little bit longer. And because those are the drugs for which we have evidence, it becomes unethical not to give cancer patients these proven drugs. And we overlook, say, carrots and tomatoes and apricot pits that can actually keep you healthy, because we're too busy giving drugs that add just a little bit of life at the end rather than a lot of life in the middle. Dr. Helvey, you've certainly had a lot of life in the middle. 39 years is a wonderful story.
Right, right. I feel very fortunate to have, you know, come through this, to be healthy, to be able to get up every day and feel good and get out and walk. And, you know, and that's why I believe that God saved me to help other people at this point in my life by being encouraging with my story and also helping people if I can help them in any way. And not charging. I don't believe in charging. I have my retirement. I live fine. I don't need any more money. I don't require a lot beyond what I have now. And so I just feel very fortunate, and I think helping other people makes me feel even better. So
I hope my audience heard that part about not charging. I have known other people that essentially dedicated their lives to helping cancer patients who were comfortable. They weren't sacrificing a good life. But I have known other people who were free to try things that actually worked, that people could regard positively, that actually added to life rather than protecting against death. And a common factor seems to be that people like that don't care about money a whole lot. If it's monumentally expensive and it's painful and it may or may not give you 2 or 3 weeks, well, think twice about whether you want to have that. I would say there probably are situations where people really do want that 2 or 3 weeks to be with a family member to get something resolved. So I'm not going to tell anyone that they can't or shouldn't pursue everything that modern medicine has to offer, because sometimes it really is the best thing. But wow, they're just such very different possibilities out there for people who pursue the alternatives. So one more time, Dr. Helvey, it's You Can Beat Lung Cancer, and it's available on Amazon.com, or is there some other place you prefer people to buy your book?
No, Amazon is fine. I think people think that Amazon is always the cheapest, but actually it's been cheaper most of the time on my website, because I'm selling the book for $20. Amazon, I've never figured Amazon out, because like right now it's $23.77, but it might go down to $20. It goes up and down all the time. I don't know why. But they can get it at my website as well as on Amazon. And wherever they can get it, Barnes & Noble. There's a lot of bookstores that have it. I recently heard from a man in Australia, and he was concerned his mother has lung cancer, and he wanted the copy right off, and I told him I would send him an electronic copy. I mean, I give people, like if people contact me and they have lung cancer, I send them the chapter of what I did, and I don't charge for any of this either. And I sent this young man a copy of an electronic copy so he'd have it right away. But then he told me he also found a copy in a bookstore in Australia because he wanted his father to have one copy while he was reading the other copy. So I know other bookstores have it also.
And if you have any concern at all about lung cancer, you should read You Can Beat Lung Cancer by Dr. Carlo Helvey. Dr. Helvey, thank you so much for spending part of your morning with us. And to the rest of my audience, thank you for spending an hour with us. We'll be back here next Tuesday morning at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on Steady Health Radio on BBS Radio Channel 1.